everything you got.
Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. We have another show dealing today with metaphysics and spirituality as usual, except, of course, no show is very usual, at least not this show. Tonight I thought we'd deal with the spiritual rehabilitation of some lawbreakers. Now, I'm going to have to explain exactly what I mean by that, but I thought it would be appropriate because there's some things happening in our country, in the news, and a lot of people have questions about, like, how do you deal with issues like illicit drug use and things where crimes seem to be more against maybe the individual and society as a whole, but not against specific elements of society or specific people in society. And what is the cause of the problem in the first place? Because if you don't know what the causes of things are, it's pretty hard to come up with solutions that are going to be effective. And I'd like to say if you would want to join in, you can in this discussion, of course. If you're in the U.S., give us a call at 877-876-5227. And for those of you in Canada, try 888-815-9756. And let me begin by saying that by spiritual rehabilitation, I'm talking about changing the consciousness of a person who is breaking the laws that they somewhat know or believe are laws that are there for a reason to protect other people, and that are supposed to be upheld because there's damages that happen when you break the laws. Now, you might say, well, what about the people who break laws that don't think that way? Well, then you got a different issue, because you could have someone like Henry Thoreau, who broke laws because he was civilly disobedient, and he thought he was doing something that was favorable for some elements in society. So you have to be careful about how you look at what a lawbreaker is. I'm not saying that all human laws, by the way, are just or justifiable. But I am saying that some of them, and probably the majority, are there to try to protect the public in general, and sometimes to do so in a way which is quite in accord with virtue and spiritual ideas. So it isn't as though we can maybe universally decide what is good and bad in our law system, but we can kind of collectively come to a vast majority of people, not everybody. I'm certainly going to say that. Now, what about spiritual rehabilitation? What does that mean? It means that we're going to try to find ways to correct the problem by bringing a change in the consciousness of those that are creating the breakage in the laws that we think need to be upheld. And to do so without quote-unquote retribution, which is most of the concepts in a penal system, and instead to find a better solution. Now, in most cases, this means we're not dealing with violent criminals. We're not dealing with people who have to be incarcerated and blocked out of the rest of our paths because they are dangerous to others just by being free to do whatever they want. That's a different issue, and I'm not really discussing that because I think that we all have the right to live a safe and protected life from those who seek to harm us. And if it's necessary to incarcerate someone in order to achieve that result because of their behavior, And I do not, I don't disagree with that concept. But what I'm suggesting here is there's a number of crimes, and I'm going to be starting with drugs. There's a number of crimes in which it is not likely true in most circumstances that the person is a danger to others without being incarcerated. In other words, you have to incarcerate them or else they're going to be dangerous. That could be true in the case of some people, say, who use certain kinds of drugs in certain ways, and maybe through their behaviors after that point they become paranoid or violent. And then because of that effect, it isn't necessarily that they're a quote-unquote breaking a drug law, it's because they're breaking other laws subsequently, they have to be incarcerated. But that's a different issue again. I'm trying to make it very clear. You notice how I'm cutting a path here that deals specifically with certain elements and not others in our society. The United States has a sixth-rate personality. What does that mean? That's kind of a really, really far out there metaphysical thing, right? Well, it means that we tend to be very focused and very addictive in some respects, more so than almost any other society. The sixth rate has great things about it. It tends to be very loving, at least in one direction at a time. It tends to be very focused in religious ways and sometimes spiritually religious ways. It tends to be very astral in its expression, which is not a bad thing. I don't want you to think that that means I'm not saying anything derogatory in implying that. So it tends to do all those things. But one of the things that it doesn't do very well is it doesn't allow people to move the direction very easily away from a path so chosen. And if someone starts using drugs a lot, they tend to get hooked or addicted to the drugs because the nature of our country and those people who live in it is tainted by the personality effects of the country overall. Now, you can say, how is that possible? Why is the sixth ray like that? Well, you see, when people get afraid under each of the different ray energies. Now, I'm not explaining those tonight, so if you don't understand them, you maybe pick up some ideas as I'm going through this, but I'm not going to go through that again because I don't have the time tonight to do it. But there's so many shows that I've done on the rays. You can go back to those and look at them or listen to them. And so here we have a situation where because of the nature of this particular personality effect, fear is a major component. The personality is very responsive to fear. And when people get afraid virtually of anything, it doesn't matter, but anything that makes a difference to them, when the sixth ray is the focus of the country, and it's more on a national kind of scale, it tends to push people's buttons in their personality, making them react in ways that are along the sixth ray in a negative fashion. And the negative, one of the negative ways is to be habitual and to look for an escape that is very emotional in nature rather than mental or physical. Consequently, you put all this together, what I just said, and when times are tough, like right now, when we have a lot more in terms of unemployment, economic crises, political pressures, things that are going on that bother people more than, say, 5 years ago, or especially 10. Although if we go back to 2001, that was another crisis that brought about a similar kind of thing. Then people tend to turn to escapes, which includes drugs. Now, what is an escape? It's an escape from the fear. It's escape from the negative emotional content of their lives. It's escape from a lack of meaning in life in a more longer-term situation. And these are the elements that come to bear personally on people when their life is run mostly by personal rather than spiritual issues, which is a big part of it, by the way, and it leads them towards using drugs. Now, I have some statistics to back that up. A couple of days ago, one of the news organizations came out with a statistical study or report about the number of people using drugs who are employed, fully employed, those who are partially employed, and those who are completely unemployed. And the drug use doubled in each case. So, I mean, we're talking a huge amount of increase in drug use because people didn't have a job. And think about the counterintuitive element in this. If someone doesn't have a job, they don't have as much money to go buy drugs. I mean, sure, they can do illegal things, but most people aren't stealing, at least to get a lot of the drugs they're getting. And so you can say they're really shifting their priorities, maybe from even food and shelter to the escape of the drug itself. Now, they may not be using the drugs to the extent that someone who's totally hooked and is stealing to get the money to do it, but nonetheless, it's a real concern. It's so much of a concern, Florida and a couple other states now are enacting a drug screening for people receiving unemployment insurance payments and refusing to pay to people their unemployment if they are using drugs under the basis that the money is being squandered instead of used for its intended purposes. I don't know how illegal that is, but that's what they're doing. At any rate, so in looking at it from this particular standpoint, we can see that there is some direct proof of what my statements were. You can call them theories, but I believe them more to be more than that, about what happens when people get fearful and when they don't find meaning in their life, etc. So we have a peculiar issue going on in the United States. The United States is the wealthiest country in the world that is controlled personally by the sixth ray. And that's a real scary thing because we have the most opportunity to indulge our fears and our anxieties and our meaninglessness with the use of chemicals to make us temporarily escape and, quote-unquote, emotionally feel better. Now, it's important to understand that these remedies that I'm saying people do to themselves are effective in a very short-term basis. So don't think that people are doing drugs as some children might or very young people for the sake of peer pressure or to show off. I'm saying that the vast majority of people that I'm referring to in my discussion tonight are using drugs to escape. And that's a very big difference. So consequently, in the last couple years, and especially the last year, children have started to use drugs less, according to statistics given out this week as well. But adult populations are vastly increasing in their use. And that's the difference. The children do it for peer pressure, to exploit sexuality and certain other factors that they're afraid of or that they're experimenting with. But they're not necessarily doing it to just escape. They may do it somewhat to escape, but not most of them aren't. Some of them may come from very bad household, and they may use it to escape. And there could be obvious examples of that. But the majority aren't doing it for that, whereas adults or people in the adult class are using drugs to escape. That's the primary factor. Now, how do we deal with people who want to escape from fears and anxieties and, in a longer-term sense, who may have a certain kind of spiritual depression that leads to meaninglessness, how do we deal with people who have these kinds of problems? Do we, as we have for 50 years, put them in prison when we catch them, treat them as criminals, which tends to lower their consciousness further, decrease their sense of self, which is an important issue we'll be talking about in a little while, and ruins their overall reputation and their ability to gain work and to do meaningful things in the future. If you think that that's a solution for dealing with the problem with somebody who already has that problem, in other words, to make it worse for them, then you're, I think, in the wrong, you're moving in the wrong direction. But that's what most of our society believes. And it isn't, it hasn't worked. Gee, I wonder why not. Because it aggravates the circumstance that causes the problem. And that's why I said we have to go to the cause to get some clarity about what it is that's really wrong. Because if you don't have clarity about what's wrong, you're going to possibly do what we've done for 50 years, which is make the problem worse. Now, you can say, yes, there has been some decreases in the use of some drugs by very harsh penalties in some locales. I'll agree with that. That doesn't mean that those people are any better off. We may have stopped at 10% or 15% of the people that might still be using drugs from doing it by ruining their lives and imprisoning them. But is that really the solution we're looking for? Has that really helped society overall? Would it have been better to just let them use the drugs, maybe, and we had a better society? Because it didn't solve the problem, and they are crippled people now. They're much worse than they were before. So what I'm suggesting is the following. I don't want to decriminalize drugs. Ah, you thought I was going to say that, didn't you? No, I do not. Because decriminalizing drugs tells people it's okay to escape. I don't want them to know that. I don't want them to think that. Because it isn't. It isn't okay to medicate yourself, some people call it that, in a process which leads you into oblivion. So you can deal with your fears and your anxieties and your meaninglessness. That's not a solution. What is a solution? The solution is to get people to become more spiritual, because that's where their failing is. The only reason we respond with excessive fears, which ultimately leads to the fear of death, but I won't get too much in that tonight either. And the only reason that we have these excessive anxieties is that we don't have a balance in our life of spiritual principles. Because if we did, the following would take place. When we're spiritual, we are more giving. When we're more giving, we're more conscious, and we have a higher self, a stronger self structure. And we can handle a lot more pressures and a lot more problems than we can otherwise. And it is the fix, the real fix, for the problems of why people turn to drugs. That's the solution. I know it sounded ridiculous to say it that quickly because I built it up to this, but that's it. That's really what the ball game is about. What we're really fighting about here is trying to get people to become more conscious, more giving. They're all the same words. More understanding, more planning, more loving in their life. And then that will alleviate most of the difficulties that we have with drugs, particularly with adults using drugs. And we should not decriminalize drugs. We should instead change the method of dealing with those who are found to be using drugs. We should still call them lawbreakers. I wouldn't want to call them criminals. I would call them spiritually impoverished lawbreakers. People who, through not giving enough in their life and through having very high levels of relative pressures to their belief system of being able to deal with it, find themselves in positions where they are looking for an escape. And we need to make their penance not being locked up in a cell or paying fines, but rather to start doing deeds of good works that tends to literally reverse some of the damage they're doing to society by using drugs. Some of that damage is in increasing those who are actually selling drugs on a wide scale and who are in that business. Those are real criminals now. Now, we're not talking about necessarily, they may be drug users too, but they're real criminals. And we need to enlist their aid in every step of the part of the process that they have encouraged. Maybe they'll be down at the border checking for people who are carrying drugs into the United States or money out of it towards Mexico. Maybe that's part of their penance. They have to spend X amount of months or years doing that task as a sort of inscripted helper as a border guard. I'm just making this up as I go along. I really didn't think of that till now. But I'm just trying to give you some ideas. You know, maybe they're going to be working with youth who are doing drugs for somewhat different reasons, but still need to hear about where it can lead to and the dangers and problems and how it makes you more selfish to do drugs. Because drugs have an insidious nature. They not only are an escape, they are a direct reduction in consciousness through their use, and they lead to possessions. Possessions are beings who are very, very selfish but exist in outside of the physical realm and are looking for means of finding those they can experience some of our realm here with by controlling some of the sense and experience that people have who are presently alive here. It's a real thing. I know it sounds like something out of The Exorcist, but it's a real thing. Now, not everybody that's possessed is possessed by some kind of devil or something, but sometimes you can be possessed by a really dark being. There's no question about that. Most people aren't, by the way. They're possessed by people who are very selfish, but they exist just in another dimensional aspect of our universe. Okay, so this leaves you open to these terrible possibilities because your consciousness is dropping. Now, I'm not saying you're, those who are listening to me, I'm hoping that you're not into this thing, but I'm saying those who are specifically using are going to be dropping their consciousness. And the more addicted they are, the more the consciousness has been dropped and affected. There's actually a direct relationship between those. So as we examine this, we start seeing, wow, this is a real serious issue, isn't it? Yeah. And the way to get around it is to start using methods different than we have been to educate. Education is very helpful. To use certain psychological and psychotherapeutic methods to help people to get over some of their excessive fears and anxieties, and to provide people with responsibilities to correct karmically and internally within themselves their selfishness and to get them to become truly giving to others and to eventually help others to become giving as well. This could be a whole series of different plans that are developed for different kinds of people. And the person themselves needs to be involved in the construction of the plan itself. Wow, what an interesting idea. And so they have some input into it. But it has to be by a committee decided whether this is a solution for this individual. And that committee could be 30, 40 people at a time. So it isn't stilted by just one or two persons making a decision about another individual. And those people come up with a conclusive plan of treatment. But the treatment is, in a way, we can call a penance, but it isn't incarcerated. It isn't, we're not going to flog the person. We're not even going to take away their possessions. Instead, we're going to require them to give service. And the more they need it, the more they will get it, the more they will have to serve. The length of time is not predetermined. This is my suggestion, anyway. Why make it for a year or two or five? Let's just make it until the person has corrected the issues within themselves and they show an ongoing ability to carry through these kinds of permanent life changes. We check up on them on a regular basis, real probation, you might call it. And then in addition to that, they are drug tested very regularly. They are observed. They're made. We make sure that these are people that are going to be successful in the programs we put them in. And those that are unsuccessful, we always have the option, if they are seriously offending and doing some really terrible things, to incarcerate them. It's not a problem. I mean, but we would get rid of 95% of those that are presently incarcerated, which is over half of all the people incarcerated in the United States. That's a huge number, like a million, millions of people. It's staggering that over half the people presently in jails and penitentiaries are there because they've used illicit drugs and have been arrested for that use, sometimes for also small quantities, relatively small quantities of sale as well. But still, I mean, we're not talking about drug lords here or something. We're talking about people who are predominantly users. And so that's who we go and get them out of the jails and put them into service. Instead of paying for them to be there, let them earn a meager living while they're paying back, quote-unquote, society in general, and their soul, and working with the souls of others. This is not pie in the sky. I'm giving a very pragmatic viewpoint, in my opinion. I don't know if you guys who are out there are leaning towards the left, right, or in between. This is not a political gesture here. I'm talking about something that just kind of makes sense. Because our present method, which has been used for, I'm not kidding, 50 years. That's it, 50 years. We've been in a drug war or whatever. It's nuts. It doesn't make any sense. And it was really intensified after the early 1970s when we came out like we're going to really fight drugs. Because right before that, we had a much better plan that was moving in the direction I just suggested, and we scrapped it. And we went towards this, we're going to go get them. And we started the Drug Enforcement Agency at the same time. And we decided we'll just go out and bash some heads and shoot people and put them in jail, and that'll stop it. It didn't work. It really didn't work, and it's not going to. Because it makes the problem worse rather than improving it. And that's the bottom line. And whether you're a staunch believer that, you know, an eye for an eye, chop the person's thumb off, put them in jail, I don't care. When you look at the facts and they tell you that all you're doing is making things worse, you've got to make some changes. Come on. Let's be wise. Let's do something that... I'm not talking about being mushy about this. I'm not talking about, you know, patting everybody on the head and saying, oh, you poor little thing, let me give you some methadone and you can be a drug addict for the rest of your life. No, I'm saying the opposite. But I'm saying don't put them just away like we're going to solve the problem by imprisoning everybody, which is what we've been doing, because obviously you've got like a million people in jail. We've been doing a lot of that, right? Okay. All right, so I want you to think about what I've been saying. I'm going to come back and we're going to add some other factors to this drug issue, and then I'm going to expand this to certain other kinds of issues about laws and how to deal with certain parts of the problems we have in our society and spiritual ways. I hope this is making sense. I don't know who's really listening out there, but if it makes sense to you, why not let the people who are making laws in this country and carrying them out know more about it. Because you got to voice your opinion, because right now they're only talking about two things. Either legalize everything, or, you know, which doesn't make any sense, or throw everybody in jail. Neither one of those things are going to work. Okay, so we're going to be back now we'll be back in about 3.5 minutes. And we have an extra commercial in there. And remember, so listen to commercials, they always seem to be helpful. There's something in there. Maybe. If not, come back in 3.5 minutes and we'll talk more about this.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower, MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Imagine for a moment that you are transported back to 1909, 100 years ago, but you retain your memory of all the advances which occurred in 100 years. Airplanes, cell phones, the internet, TV, space travel. Now, come back to 2009. Do you think progress will stop? What will be the most significant happening of the next 100 years? Leo Kim's book, Healing the Rift, Bridging the Gap Between Science and Spirituality, will reveal to you the new scientific revolution and the power of the mind wirelessly connected to the universe will be the event which changes our world by healing many rifts and by changing our lives. Progress will not stop, and neither will you. Get Leo Kim's book at Amazon.com or visit HealingTheRiftBook.com.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we're talking about the spiritual rehabilitation of some lawbreakers. And it doesn't mean it's everybody that necessarily breaks laws on either side. Either they may not be breaking laws that are truly spiritual laws, and they may be doing the opposite. They may be terrible at it, and they may have to be incarcerated, or in the normal penal system has to apply. But there's a huge group of people that are in between. And in the first half, of course, we're talking about people who are lawbreakers because they're using illicit drugs. And you notice I didn't necessarily say the difference between like marijuana and methamphetamine and cocaine and stuff. And the reason I didn't is because the drug itself is somewhat less important than the problem is in an underlying nature. Now, there's no question that some drugs cause more problems for people, even when they're not using the drug, or at least not directly being affected by the drug, than others. And I can differentiate those, and we can go into interesting discussions about it. But the same problems apply, just usually to different levels of magnitude. And people may use a less potent drug for less need to escape, is one way to look at it. Or they might use a drug that changes their personality to being more either extroverted or introverted based upon what they find helps them to escape more. So these are differences, but they don't really change the underlying way to deal with the circumstance. The more addicted someone is, the harder it is to apply the spiritual rehabilitation plan, because the addiction itself is compelling, and it requires, in some cases, 60, 90 or more days of special treatment before you could even apply the plan that I'm suggesting. So don't think I'm saying you take someone who's a hardcore heroin addict, and even before they've kicked the heroin, much less in a physical sense, much less the psychological, you throw them out and say, okay, we're going to put you in a soup kitchen now. We want you to be starting to help people. I don't think so. I think maybe a few months down the line, you could start that. So don't think, again, that I was saying that we throw people into these situations. Remember, I talked about therapy. I talked about doing things to alter the person back to some level of functionality before you start putting them down as border guards or something, or pseudo-border guards, if that be the case. But something, you know. And so, nonetheless, these are issues that are the details. I'm dealing with the concepts, not the details. Details we could spend months, years trying to construct all the different ways to apply the concepts I'm suggesting. But let's move on from just the question of drugs to people who are lawbreakers in another way. We have a large group of people who are using various types of positions of control and power to manipulate and harm others. Sometimes the governors of states, you know, such as Illinois. Sometimes they may be politicians in various other offices as well. And sometimes they're administrative people in government. And sometimes they're in private industry. But I think it's important to realize that these are also lawbreakers. I mean, if someone concocts a plan to rip off $100 billion from whole parts of society by making fake, we'll call it securities and things, then we need to be doing something very serious about how to deal with them. You know, now, I'm not talking about the guy who's doing the Ponzi kind of routine. I'm talking about someone who does it semi-legally, but it's still illegal in the sense that it is breaking a spiritual law. And this is where we get into problems. Most of our laws are not based upon truths. They are based upon pragmatic needs of someone doing something that has caused a problem, and then some, a group of others saying, you got to stop that from happening again, kind of thing. But you don't have a real foundation about the spiritual side of behavior. And I am suggesting something that's almost going to sound like, well, that sounds like the, you know, like Islam or something. I think we need added to our structure of laws the concept of both morality and of virtue. Now, I do believe in the separation of church and state, by the way, I do. But I think that this doesn't have to be a religious idea as much as it could be completely secular, as much as it is the concept that right and wrong has been left out of a considerable amount of our laws. And I would like to see it put more in. Now, not to replace the laws we have, but to augment them. So the motive of a person and the rational reasons that people are doing things should be put into the concept of law. For those of you who are interested in metaphysics, and you may believe in a place that used to be called Atlantis, they actually did this on Atlantis. They didn't have the kind of laws we have. They had laws that were based more on the other side, which is it, does that seem like a good moral thing? Does that feel right? Now, it's difficult to have laws that are based somewhat on feeling, but in this case, I'm not talking about it in an astral sense. I'm talking about it more on a higher level, where mental is applied, but truth is really an issue. And does this really create truth in what the person did or didn't do? There are sometimes when people break laws that they actually are creating a higher truth in the process. I talked about Henry Thoreau, who was doing something like that. But it's important to realize that you can't have a system that just is based upon truth only. You have to have some codification, because if you don't, in our present world, we don't have a way of determining truth very easily. But there are some things we can do to improve in this area. So what I'm suggesting is that we modify some of our laws, at least starting in the United States. It'd be very interesting to do this. And maybe just in a few states to see how it works. We incorporate a new standard. How much did it harm or not harm others? How much was it selfish or unselfish on the part of the person who was enacting whatever the law breaking was employed? Whoa, that sounds like a pretty strange thing, I know. But it isn't that impossible to actually have a jury of our peers to determine to some degree that. Now, how would that then mitigate in the issues? Well, the more that people who break any laws in a more traditional sense have some mitigating goodness in what they've done, and maybe some badness too. I'm not saying it was just all good. And they also did limited harm compared to what could have been or others have done under the same kind of law breaking. Those people should have a totally different set of criteria in terms of how they're dealt with. I'm suggesting spiritual rehabilitation. I'm suggesting those people not ever face incarceration as we know it, but rather they be given the opportunity to correct what they did and to do it in a way that's completely reasonable and that builds their self-esteem and makes them operate in a higher level. And gives them a greater opportunity to reverse their karma, because they're going to face this anyway. And it isn't like then we're in accord with the universe. It's like, wow, we would be working with God. And we're not with most of our laws right now. I have to tell you that the majority of our laws don't work spiritually. They have too many problems. And so this would change the system. It would really give a new flavor to what it means to live in a free society and one like ours. It's so radical that it's almost hard to talk about it, because I think that defining it has to be further worked out in any details. And when we talk about it, it sounds like, well, that sounds crazy. Well, maybe it does, but I want you to think about it, because that's what all these shows are about. It's about thinking, right? Obviously, I'm not going to say something that's going to happen. I'm just here talking about giving some ideas about how to change the way we live so that maybe we can live better and more in the light of God. That's what I'm talking about. That's it, seriously. And I'm not defining God in a specific thing or way. I'm just saying God is the goodness in the world. And we could be more good. Wouldn't that be wonderful? By some of these ideas of spiritual rehabilitation under certain circumstances for some lawbreakers, which is about what today's show is about. And so you could see that this could have a profound effect in quite a few areas. Tremendously profound, actually. And it would handle a good deal of what many people call soft crime, and it will also include some areas that aren't even crimes right now. It might make certain things criminal to have been done, because you might go back and re-look at the question of if someone is manipulating around the law and doing great harm, because we've had this happen recently in the last few years in our securities markets, etc., that maybe we should have some spiritual rehabilitation for those people enacting the other side of the law, the moral part of the law. Like, yeah, we didn't really have a law against it, but there should have been. We were just too stupid, and you were too smart as a greedy criminal, but you got away with it. But, you know, and then a lot of people would say, well, that's ex post facto. You're applying something after the fact. Not really. I mean, and not in my mind, but I certainly would be open to thinking about it. Now, how could you codify things? Well, maybe you can't. Maybe that's the problem with this. And maybe I'm not sure that we can't always be successful in some areas using this method. Certainly some areas we can't. But for those that just squeak by and get around the system, it might still be difficult to deal with those few people. But nonetheless, there was a time, as far as I'm concerned, a million years ago, 100,000, 10, even 20,000 years ago, where, of course, 20,000, things weren't too good in Atlantis, but where there was a society that used these kinds of methods. Of course, we would have found it very, very upsetting because there was no codification. So you go before one group of judges or whatever, and they didn't really have juries, but one group of judges, and they come up with one idea, and another comes up with a different. And they might both agree that you did something wrong, but how you did it wrong and on what basis isn't codified, so you don't really know. But the results seem to be not that bad, actually, from what I know of it. So there could be answers in this as we grow in our wisdom in the ability to create solutions using spiritual rehabilitation. Now, I want to go back to the subject of drugs again and look at this from these other concepts. If we are trying to change the problem we have with drugs, which is lowering the consciousness of our citizens and destroying our ability to function, we have to look at it as the nature of our whole society to want to become more conscious. And we have to value consciousness much more. We have to even understand what it is much more and then value it much more than we do at the present time. The same is true about other people breaking other laws in other ways. So our problem is that we don't really even have a consciousness is not part of our consciousness for the most part. So education is huge, hugely needed to change this issue. And I'm not talking about education about the three R's. I'm talking about education that explains the spiritual side of existence. It's going to be a tough one. But we need to spiritually educate ourselves. We have to look at consciousness, givingness, love, as a thing that we want to develop in ourselves and others. We want to develop it as a society in general. And the changing of the ways that we mete out justice and apply our laws and even create our laws is going to be somewhat determined by issues of spirituality besides the factors that usually have to do with pragmatism and money. Have you ever noticed that most things that are illegal to be done are quantified in some monetary sense? So ultimately, everything boils down to money. You could even, in many cases, pay a fine to remedy the quote-unquote law that you broke. You drive down the freeway here in, for those of you who aren't familiar with Phoenix, the last few months they put in all these cameras and they're giving $200 tickets. But guess what? You don't get any points in your license. You don't even go before a magistrate or judge. You just pay the money because they put in the cameras to get the money. They don't care about anything else. Now, they lie and say they do. But the interesting thing about this is that makes the society less spiritual and more based upon material issues. Because the means of the law itself in its application is all about material things. And that makes it worse. Now, you might cut down the number of speeders. I don't doubt that because after somebody pays a few $200 tickets, they're going to start driving slower. But how does it affect their consciousness? It may make them more selfish. Because the only thing they are concerned about is the $200 and not necessarily their speed. The better alternative would be if more and more people drove at a speed that they, society feels, is relevant to the safety of everybody, and collectively it's like an agreed-upon principle. And this is going to sound strange, but just think about it this way. What if the speed limit signs, you know, they can read your speed as you're going down the highway and you get the little readout. What if the speed limit signs averaged every minute the speed of all the cars that passed, and the speed limit changed with the average of the cars that are driving? That's the speed limit. And if you go over that speed limit by a certain percentage, then you automatically, one of the cameras takes a picture of you and you get a ticket. Think about what that would mean. That the people themselves would be deciding what is appropriate for their own driving as a collective group, based upon their needs to conserve energy and gasoline, their needs to have enough safety so that they can stop in time, etc., have enough room to move about and not get hit, and be in control of their vehicle. An interesting idea. I mean, one that I don't think anybody should have come up with before, but, you know, I always come up with these goofy things, I guess. But the point is, but you see what I'm saying here. I'm saying now you have something where people are educating and they're also working together. You would then start realizing that if you're going way faster than the group of people that you're traveling with on the highway, you're in disagreement with them, and you're providing a greater level of risk. Because the more your speed is different from everyone else's, the more you become a risk to the other people. That's a physics principle, by the way. So this is a fascinating idea. We could make a lot of laws like this, actually, where it's relative to how people are functioning within a society. Now, it may not be a speed limit sign that's changing continuously or every minute or whatever, but it might be some other elements in society where the laws are somewhat giving and taking based upon the overall behaviors of people and whether or not people are acting lovingly or responsibly or not. You can't make laws that are way beyond the consciousness of people because nobody will follow them. And you can't make them too far below the consciousness of people because then the problem is that the people who are more giving are continuously being abused by the people who are taking. It's a real problem. We're running out of time for right now, but I hope this has been thought-provoking and has given you some ideas to maybe write to a congressman about or do something to make some changes in the way we're presently moving, because I don't think the directions we're moving in are going to be very helpful. And I do think we need to become a society in which consciousness is the ultimate goal, and consciousness is the ultimate answer for most of the problems that we are facing. I wanted to mention that one of the members of a spiritual group I'm a member of, who is Mimi, is going to be talking about the mental realm at Borders Books and Music at Mesa Fiesta, 1301 South Alma School Road in Mesa, if you're in the Phoenix metropolitan area. And she's going to be doing that on April 20th from 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m. Come by. That's, I think, this coming Monday, if I'm right. So come by and join in. And there's no charge. And I know a number of you have been coming, so it's great. For those of you who live in this area, it's a terrific thing. Or if you're visiting, it's a good way to spend about an hour and 15 minutes of your time. And I also want to mention to you that if you have any questions or any thoughts that you would like to address, you can do so at thoughts@whylifeis.com. And you can do that at any time. And I eventually will get that email and respond to you. Please do. And if you ever want to listen to the show, you can listen to the show directly off the rehash, off of the network we're on, or you can listen sometimes on our website if we can get the show up in time, and you can hear it over again there, or you can listen to shows that you may have missed. So please think about that. Okay, so I hope tonight's show has made some difference in the lives of those of you who have been listening. And I hope that you will consider, especially about this question about drugs, that we need a new path. And the path I suggested, although there's a lot of details to be worked out, I think is the better path than the present mode we're on, because it has failed. And more failure is not going to solve our problems, believe me. We have too many to think about at this particular junction. Okay, so until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.
People ask Leo Kim why he wrote Healing the Rift, Bridging the Gap Between Science and Spirituality. He wrote it to empower you, to explain how you can discover the spiritual you, reveal your passions, realize your purpose, and find greater happiness in life, how to deal with death and illness of friends and loved ones, and to tell you about the healing mind, how changing your mind can and does change your brain, your health, and your life. Spiritual teachings, when merged with 21st century scientific teachings, will transform our lives. Leo Kim wanted to write in layman's terms for the non-scientist on what exciting benefits will occur in the 21st century when we heal the rift between science and spirituality. Buy Healing the Rift at bookstores, Amazon, or email him for a discounted copy at leo@healingtheriftbook.com.